Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Today, we're going to be talking about shift work with Dr. Jessie Deach. She is an assistant professor of psychology, a clinical psychologist, and certified in behavioral sleep medicine. Welcome, Dr. Deach.
Thanks. So great to be here.
Great. We're glad to have you because shift work is such an important thing that impacts a lot of people, and it really does impact their sleep as well. So I'm excited to talk about the issues related to that. Why don't we start off? Just tell us what do you do with shift workers? What got you into the area?
Yeah. So my background originally was in treating insomnia. And I started branching out from that area during grad school and then more so during postdoc, looking at groups who were affected by insomnia that maybe were kind of overlooked in the research or who hadn't gotten a lot of attention. Because by that point, we had tons and tons of trials about cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. It was kind of old news at that point. Right. And one thing that I noticed is that most trials of this treatment, CBTI, are excluding people who do shift work or have any kind of weird schedule. And I thought, hey, that's interesting. You know, what's going on there? And do these people have some sort of option? And turns out that in terms of behavioral interventions, the answer was really no. That's what I've been working on for the past couple of years, is kind of coming up with an adaptation and really maybe even we could call it a new treatment, a behavioral treatment for people who do night shift work specifically.
Night shifts. Okay. So give us an example of the types of people that we're talking about who might do night shift work. What type of jobs
Absolutely.
Would that be?
Yeah, so right now, the trials that we're running right now are looking specifically at nursing staff. So registered nurses, certified nursing assistants, people in that domain in the healthcare space. That's just kind of where we started. And we're hoping to expand it out to other industries, thinking about, you know, even grocery store workers and stockers. Transportation workers, bus drivers, other people in healthcare, you know, who aren't providing direct patient care necessarily. So it's shift work cuts across most, I would say, every essential industry, like the kind of main industries that keep our society functioning. And so you can find them, you know, just about anywhere that someone's doing an important job.
Right. Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking to myself, probably people involved with shipping things like UPS, Amazon, Postal Service, those types of things, they probably work at night, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. I mean, factory workers, manufacturing, like if you're thinking about a company trying to do things efficiently, it makes sense to have people working around the clock, even if it's not the best thing for them and their health to be doing that.
Right. Right. Okay, so we got an idea of the types of jobs and the types of people that we're talking about here. So obviously they're up when it's dark outside and other people might be sleeping. So what types of things do these shift workers normally run into when it comes to sleep issues?
Well, so I want to back you up just a little bit because I think the definition of shift worker is a little bit broader than some people tend to think. And so I like to think of it as people who are kind of working outside of the typical sort of, you know, maybe 9 to 5, 8 to 6, maybe window. So that could include people like evening workers who are maybe working from 3 in the afternoon till 11 at night, or morning workers who have to be at work, say, at 4 a.m. And work a shift from there. So it kind of cuts across a lot of hours, and it also includes people who tend to be on call as well. And the problem with this, particularly when you get into those shifts where things are really, really reversed from the norm, like that early morning shift, or say, you know, starting your shift late in the evening, is that you are then, after your shift, trying to sleep at a time when your biology is saying, it's time to be awake. And that really causes a problem, because we're pretty finely tuned in terms of our circadian rhythm, telling us when to sleep and when to be awake, and kind of regulating that. And then all of the things that it regulates in addition to our sleep as well.
Okay, so you just used the term circadian rhythm. So tell us, what does a circadian rhythm do? What is it based on? How does it work?
Yeah, so our circadian rhythm is the approximately 24-hour rhythm that our bodies are tied to this Earth that we live on that has this light-dark cycle via. And so all living organisms pretty much on Earth have a circadian rhythm, and it's like I mentioned, tied to the cycle of light and dark that happens every 24 hours on our planet. Certain things in the body, most physiological processes, are regulated by this rhythm. And in fact, every cell in our body has a little clock in it that is tied to our circadian rhythm. So it serves a really, really important function, and it kind of keeps us linked to our physical reality in the world in some senses.
Okay. So that's, I guess, part of the biology and all that tells us when it's dark outside, it's probably time to go to bed. So that's got to be, you know, when we talk about shift workers, like you were saying, even people who work later in the evening or whatever time it may be. So they're working, the light's starting to go down outside, or it's not up yet, depending on what their shift is. So what does that do to their bodies? What does that do to their systems?
Yeah, I mean, I think of it kind of as being in two categories. So the first is impacts on sleep. So, you know, it can make it really hard to fall asleep when your circadian rhythm is giving you these signals like, be awake, be awake, be awake. It's giving you these kind of big alerting signals. But meanwhile, you haven't slept, you know, say in 15 hours or something, or in 20 hours, and you're feeling the need to really fall asleep. And so those processes are now competing, right? So that can make it really hard to fall asleep, give you sort of like an insomnia type experience, although it's really driven by the mismatch between the circadian rhythm and the sleep drive at that point, not like a traditional insomnia. But it can then go on to develop into more of like a psychophysiological insomnia, where you're starting to worry, like, after a shift, I have a hard time falling asleep, it's making me anxious, and then kind of contributing and adding on top of that process. So that's one of the things. Also, it's really hard when you're sleeping during the day, especially, or really out of sync with your circadian rhythm, to actually sleep for long enough. Because even if it doesn't interrupt your ability to fall asleep at the beginning of your sleep episode, it's really hard for most people to maintain enough sleep right at that time, and they tend to wake up, you know, earlier than they would have if they were sleeping in sync. So those are two of the big problems. And then the other half of it is how it affects you when you're trying to be awake, right? And you can imagine, if you're not getting enough sleep, if you are trying to be awake when your body is saying, hey, it's time to be asleep right now, your circadian rhythm not helping you out with any alerting signals, in fact, has deserted you at this point and says you're on your own with all of the sleepiness that you've built up. And then that can look like, you know, fatigue, trouble staying awake, lots of sleepiness, just feeling kind of off or just generally ill. If you've ever had to get up early for a flight or something like that, you know, you just, everything feels off. Your digestion feels different. You just kind of feel sick. you can maybe feel a little disoriented, confused. It's carrying that feeling with you kind of all the time.
Right. Wow. Okay. So that begs two specific questions then. One of them is going to be, so if you are a shift worker and you're having trouble staying awake while you're working, I want to talk about that, but then I also want to talk about the reverse, which is, okay, so now you're trying to sleep. What can you do? So you pick which one you want to talk about first.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a 24-hour problem, right? We can't just look at one side of the issue. I think it's a little hard to say, like, I can boil it down to just a couple of tips, but there are some things that work for people and who maybe don't need to, like, get into a treatment study like the one that I'm doing. And some people just are better adaptable to shift work, and they don't have a big issue with sleeping in the context of shift work. And for those people, you know, just kind of keeping to the basics and keep doing what they're doing, right? That's probably sufficient. But for people who are really struggling, who are maybe starting shift work and worried about it, I think there are some things that you can do to adapt, right? We know that probably in all likelihood, you're not going to be sleeping as well overall as you would be if you were sleeping perfectly in line with your circadian rhythm. But we can probably get you to looking good enough sleep-wise in a lot of cases. And like I mentioned, the circadian rhythm is so closely tied to light. And so being really careful about when you get light and when you avoid light can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. So I think a general rule of thumb is that when you're sort of leading up to your sleep period, whenever that might be, and when you're especially during the middle of your sleep period, is being a little bit careful about avoiding light to the extent possible. So that means things like blackout curtains and keeping your bedroom environment really dark, trying not to use electronics that are kind of flashing light in your face. But even leading up to that, say like when you get home from work in the morning, dimming the lights, wearing dark sunglasses around until it's time for bed, starting to kind of delay and tell your body, hey, like, it's dark now. We're trying to fool yourself, essentially, mm-hmm. and trying to avoid getting light at that point, because light in that morning time can be especially challenging because your circadian rhythm is particularly sensitive to light, generally in the morning. And then on the other side of that is when to get light. And so that is during the times that you want to be awake. It seems obvious, but when you're working during the night, sometimes you don't have as much access to bright light, right? Because the sun's not out. So you're going to have to go out of your way to get bright light. And our indoor lighting that we have is generally not what I would consider to be sufficient bright light. And so you may need to seek out kind of an alternative lighting device, like a light box or light glasses, something to give you a big dose of light and tell your circadian rhythm, hey, this is the time to be awake right now. Mm-hmm. And that has benefits for sleep and for alertness as well. It can help you kind of in the moment feel more alert to have all the lights on. But also, you know, it can help you kind of adjust a little bit to that alternate schedule that you're following as well. So right. That's one of the biggest things is not kind of passing over the importance of light. The other would be to consider breaking up sleep into multiple episodes, especially if you aren't able to get enough sleep during that sort of main chunk, right? Your sleep may not look like, hey, I just go and lay down and pass out for 8 hours and then wake up 8 hours later feeling refreshed, right? It may not have looked like that before you started shift work either.
right.
but for shift workers especially, just not shying away from, you know, planning out and being careful about taking a couple of naps so that your total overall 24-hour sleep duration kind of adds up to that somewhere in that like 7 to 9 hour range, whatever is appropriate for you. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of people that looks like, say, I get off of a night shift, I come home, get to sleep right away, right? Because that's when your circadian rhythm is least likely to be like screaming at you to be awake. It's just going to get worse as the day goes on. Sleep as long as you can. And then when you're just not able to sleep anymore, getting up, going about your day, and then planning to have a nap later in the afternoon or evening. And when I say a nap, like a decent nap, to really you know, give you the chance to collect enough sleep over that 24 hours that you can be kind of functioning well.
Great, fantastic. All right, so I'm gonna follow up in just a minute and recap some of your tips there. But first, we've got a break for a commercial. So this is Sleep Science Today. We will be right back with Dr. Jesse Dietsch.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All righty. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We're talking about shift work today. And we were just talking about things that shift workers can do to help themselves sleep or stay awake, depending on what they need to do. So some tips that I kind of pulled out of what you were sharing, and tell me if I get this right. So if someone is coming home from their shift and they want to get to sleep, but it's light outside, number one, keeping all the shades and curtains and things in your house closed, and really get some room darkening blinds for your bedroom, especially so you can recreate that dark environment. Number two, I'm going to ask you about this because this is my, for me, these days when you buy light bulbs at home, you can buy everything from the really bright daylight, you know, I call it harsh light, to the calmer, yellower, you know, more calming light. For me, I like to have the calm ones. I don't like those bright, harsh ones. I'm assuming that's probably a good thing. So if someone does come home from shift work and they have to turn some lights on, they want to have a calmer light. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say, but I would even take it a step further than that and say, if you have smart bulbs, say, to dim them to the least amount of light that you need to see to get things done, or even if you can have like a really dramatically red tinted or orange tinted bulb, those have less impact on the circadian system, and so those are, you know, not giving you the wrong signals at that point. And then another thing is, you know, if you don't have smart bulbs or you don't have that ability to control the level of light, is to wear really dark sunglasses, wraparound sunglasses, or even orange or red tinted glasses can help kind of take out the circadian impact of that light in your house.
Great tips for that side. So then let's go to the other side, which was, if you need to stay awake, you mentioned something that I wanted to ask about. So you mentioned a light box. Now, to me, and tell me if I'm getting this right, a light box basically kind of looks like an iPad in a way, and it's a light that gives you a certain temperature of light, I guess you would call it, that helps you to stay awake. And then you also mentioned light glasses, I think, and I've never heard of that. What are those?
Yeah. So bright light, we're thinking about light of an intensity that is kind of getting close to what the sun is giving you. And so for a light box, you know, like you got it right, it's like, it looks like an iPad. Sometimes these are marketed for like depression or like seasonal affective disorder, something like that. You're looking for something that's, you know, probably about 10,000 lumens and that is full spectrum or blue tinted. And then for light glasses, they sit a lot closer to your face. They're basically light. I actually have mine right here. This is not planned, but I do have them. So they're just glasses that sit on your face and shine light into your eyes. I actually prefer these. I use them myself, like when I'm traveling for jet lag or something like that, or for alertness. And they actually you can wear them around. So with a light box, you know, you have to sit near it or maybe carry it around with you or something. but with light glasses, you know, you can kind of put them on and just go about your day and do that. So it's for someone who's like working or if you're rushing in the morning, which is usually me, and you want to get your dose of light, I think they're a lot more convenient. Now, not everyone can tolerate them, but I think for people who can, they tend to be a little bit more convenient.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I've never seen those before. That's an interesting new find. Okay, so you know, we've got people who are learning to adjust their sleeping schedule and their work schedule and fight with the natural circadian rhythms, as we described. So what percentage of people are able to do that, and what percentage of people run into sleep problems from that?
Yeah, I mean, we don't actually have great data on this. That's probably something that we need to learn a little bit more. But there was one nice study conducted a number of years ago that found that maybe around a third or maybe a little more than a third of people develop what we call shift work disorder. And that is when the sleep problems associated with shift work are sort of rising to a clinical level where we're thinking, okay, this really needs some intervention.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us an example of what that might look like? And is that the same or different from insomnia? And what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, it depends a little, of course, on the diagnostic classification system you're using, which we love to, you know, squabble about how we're defining things. But the general sense is that you're experiencing either insomnia or sleepiness, you know, during your waking periods, or a combination of both. And that's directly associated with the schedule that you're keeping due to your work or social obligations, but usually work obligations. And that is, you know, generally causing you some level of distress. It's not just like a little problem. It's a pretty significant problem for you. And that's kind of the hallmark of it. Really, those are the main things.
Okay. All right. So let's say somebody does have a problem with their sleep because of the shift work that they're doing. Is there hope?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, oftentimes the best advice that you can give is if you're really not able to cope with shift work is to quit or find another shift or find another job. But that's not always realistic for people. You know, there are some jobs where that's absolutely the path to that job. Like in nursing, you know, it's most common that you start out sort of in a night shift position. And then after you have some seniority, you can move on to other types of shifts. Or, you know, sometimes the pay incentive associated with doing night shift is so attractive and people, you know, are just not willing to give that up, even if it's really, really tough to be on that. So, I think consider switching positions if it's just not working for you. But if that's not an option, then yes, I think there's hope for most people to be able to adapt. I will say that if you are a morning chronotype, so someone who is like kind of considers themselves an early bird, then doing like night shift work, you know, that kind of classic overnight job is probably going to be most hard for you to adapt to. And so those people are going to struggle the most. The older you are, you tend to have a harder time adapting to shift work as well. So that's a consideration. And like I mentioned earlier, there's probably some level of genetic predisposition that sets you up to be able to adapt or not. Not that you'll know that specifically, but if it's just so hard for you, there may be, you know, something that is really preventing you from being able to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for those people who are having trouble, well, let's see, they're starting off, they're having trouble. So they come and they see a sleep professional like you. You start working with them, and let's say that they are able to, through the work they do with you, adapt. The work you mentioned previously, CBTI, are we talking about work like talk therapy work? Are we talking about medication? What type of work would they do with you?
Yeah, so I will say I want to put a very big caveat, which is that our trials are still ongoing, and we genuinely don't know if this works yet or not. We have a pretty good hunch. And, you know, from what we're seeing with people who've come through our trials, it seems to be going well for them. But you know, I don't want to mislead and say, like, hey, this is the thing you got to get, right? We're still kind of in the early stages. But what this treatment looks like, it's an adaptation of cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, which is a behavioral treatment, psychological treatment. Meaning, yes, it's talk therapy, but really it's helping you structure your habits in a way that supports your sleep and your waking life as well. And so it's not, you know, we're not going to probably be diving back into, say, you know, extensively going through your childhood and what led you up to the shift. We're really focused on kind of what's going on right now, what in your habits is helping you, what's harming you, what information do you need, and what help do you need kind of sticking to a plan and trying things out to help you adapt over time. Basically, you know, help giving you some accountability, figuring out what's really driving this sleep problem for you, and what can we change to fix it.
Okay. So it sounds like there's some behavioral aspects to that. Like, well, you said cognitive behavioral therapy. So of course there's some behavioral. Yeah. So what about medications? Is this something that someone can just go take a pill and they don't have to deal with any of this stuff?
Oh, I wish. Yeah, that would be so simple, right? But most people, you know, I think I found that most people don't really want to take medication long term to cope with a sleep problem. And for good reason, we don't really have medications that are going to like solve this, right? You can think about, okay, so medications to help me sleep, right? So just all of our classic sleep medications. And most people don't want to be taking those long term. And they have their own potential issues, right? Side effects, carryover effects, especially if you're not really able to sleep for a full 8 hours, as maybe these medications are kind of designed to help you do, then you wake up after, you know, 5-6 hours feeling just super groggy, right? Because the medication is trying to get you to still be asleep, but your circadian rhythm is too powerful and just punches through. So that can be a problem for people, is kind of those carryover effects of the sleep medications. And then also there are medications on the other side, so, you know, wake-promoting agents. So that's things like stimulants or modafinil, armodafinil. And again, you know, side effects, things that people don't really want to be taking long-term. In the U.S., at least, you can get a prescription for modafinil for shift work, but, you know, people don't always want to be taking that long-term necessarily. And it doesn't really solve the underlying problem of not getting enough or good quality sleep. It just kind of masks the effects that it has on your waking life. And so all of the kind of health concerns associated with it potentially are still there if you're not really solving the sleep issue.
Right. So what do you say to someone who, let's say they're having trouble staying up during their overnight shift, and, you know, there's these different meds and things like that, but what do you say to someone who says, oh, well, I just drink a bunch of coffee, or I get Mountain Dew or Red Bull or, you know, one of these drinks, and, you know, that's how I power through?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more common than not in shift workers, is having a caffeine proclivity, and for good reason, right? And I don't say, like, let's try to do life without caffeine. It's the most widely used stimulant in the world. I would never want to take that away from someone. But I think there's ways to use caffeine a little bit more, you know, wisely. So generally, you know, keeping caffeine to the minimum dose that you need to be alert, and not overdoing it. The half-life of caffeine tends to be a lot longer than people think. And so if you're having it, you know, even 6 hours before you try to fall asleep, it could potentially be having an impact on your ability to fall asleep. So cutting it off early, and not like chugging a monster, you know, right at the start of your shift, but trying to consume little doses, little sips of caffeine kind of throughout the early part of the shift to try to give you sort of like an even boost and stimulant. And then just, yeah, trying to really not kind of escalate and have this sort of reactive caffeine cycle. So, hey, I had a really bad night. I'm going to need to load up on a ton of caffeine to get through this day, right? Mm-hmm. And then that sets you up to have another bad, you know, day of sleep basically after that, and kind of gets you in this bad cycle. So like something that I tell myself, like when I had a newborn, for example, had a really, really tough, you know, night of sleep. Okay. My temptation as a new parent is to just go, you know, chug a couple cups of coffee and try to get through the day, but said, no, okay, I really need to keep my coffee at like my regular level, or maybe even try to take it down a little bit so that I have a chance of getting a nap in later, right? Because if there's caffeine on board, that's going to just kind of prevent me from being able to get enough sleep. So I think there's kind of a similar process at work there as well.
Great, great. Well, this is a perfect spot for me to take our next commercial break, but I got lots of questions coming up. So stick with us. We're coming back and we're going to talk more about shift work and sleep.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, Andrew Kolsky here with Sleep Science Today. We are talking with Dr. Jesse Deitch, and we were just talking about things that shift workers can do to stay awake or stay asleep. And I had a whole list of questions I wanted to ask. So let me start off with, we talked about caffeine. What about nicotine?
Yeah, I mean, I think nicotine has a stimulant effect for sure. But I think we're all probably pretty aware of the potential downsides of nicotine as well. So, you know, I don't think that I would ever encourage someone to use nicotine, but kind of same cautions as caffeine apply. If you are using it, then try to use it earlier in the shift, not anywhere close to bedtime, keeping it at the kind of minimum amount that you would need to keep going.
Okay. All right. And I'm sure that there are some listeners who have this question. Okay, well, if I'm trying to fall asleep when I actually get home, what about melatonin or any of these other over-the-counter type of sleep aids?
Yeah. Well, melatonin is tricky. So it's over-the-counter in some countries, but in a lot of Europe, it's pretty tightly regulated. And I think for good reason. And I do think that we will see it getting more tightly regulated eventually in the U.S. Melatonin, I would say, is used very incautiously. And it has the potential to have some real drawbacks if used incorrectly. So I generally don't encourage people to take melatonin. I think, you know, it can have its uses, but usually people take really, really high doses. You know, generally the effective dose we're looking at is like half a milligram, a third of a milligram, somewhere in that range. And it's really hard to even find it sold in that concentration.
Yeah.
It's usually sold in the 3 milligram, 5, 10 milligram range. And with melatonin, you know, it's one of the signals to your body of when it's time to fall asleep. And it also is, you know, it's released naturally by your body, you know, kind of in time with your circadian rhythm. And so if you're taking it sort of, say your schedule is really variable and you're taking it kind of whenever it is you're going to sleep, that is potentially having a kind of masking effect on the actual melatonin that you produce and could over time, you know, kind of dampen those signals, those melatonin signals that you're producing on your own. And plus, you know, you can kind of push your circadian rhythm in one direction or another if you're not really aware of the timing of taking it. I think light is just a much easier and more powerful regulator. So You know, I, in terms of like blanket advice, I would say like going for light and trying to avoid melatonin overall. Or, you know, if you're going to take melatonin, being pretty, pretty sparing with it. So maybe not taking it every single sleep episode, but, just on the, you know, times that you are trying to sleep during the day, for example, or the times that, you know, it's really critical that you're getting some sleep.
So I just have to believe that there's some listeners out there that are saying to themselves, yeah, but what about CBD or THC or, you know, a glass of wine? What about those?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think as far as cannabis products, I think we just don't have a lot of excellent research in that domain to inform that. Something we do know is that long-term cannabis use tends to have kind of a backwards effect, so it tends to make your sleep worse in the long term, even if it improves it in the short term. But as far as CBD and those kinds of products, I don't know that we have great data on that. So jury's still out. And in terms of alcohol, I would really caution people against using alcohol to fall asleep. You know, any person, not just shift workers. Although alcohol can make it faster for you to fall asleep, you pay for it later on in your sleep episode. It tends to make you have more awakenings. It may shorten your sleep episode. It may reduce your sleep quality. And so probably on the balance, not worth it to be using alcohol to sleep.
Okay. So basically we come back to the issue of light and dark. If you can adjust your environment, that's going to be your primary thing to work on, right?
Yeah. And another thing I think that gets overlooked or maybe that people don't put a lot of stock in, but that can be really important is giving yourself time to unwind. You know, as I mentioned, people who are doing shift work are often in these like essential industries where things, you know, they have to really be paying attention. They have to be on at work, or it requires a lot of concentration. And so giving a buffer zone between when you get done with work and when you're trying to fall asleep, and letting yourself kind of unwind, give yourself permission to let go of the day and sort of get into a habit or routine that sort of lets you disconnect from the stress of your day, is, you know, something, especially over time as you build that habit, that can really help you sort of cue yourself, hey, it's time to fall asleep. You know, we're really, really good as humans at picking up cues that get us to go to sleep. And so, you know, setting yourself up for success with that as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about employers for a second, because the employers are the ones setting the schedule, right? And I used to assume that shift work meant that, you know, Monday through Friday, I work from 3 p.m. to 7 a.m. or something like that, whatever it may be.
If only.
Right. But then I start hearing people that's like, well, you know, on Monday, I start work at 3 p.m. But on Tuesday, I start work at, you know, 7 p.m. And they have all these schedules that are just bouncing around the calendar. I'm not quite sure the purpose of it, but that's what they have. What things could an employer be thinking about in trying to help their shift workers with better sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of thought that's gone into this in terms of how we can best structure shifts to support employees. And, you know, there's a lot of problems here. I think employers oftentimes see employees' time as resources to be kind of manipulated in the way that is most efficient for the employer, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, support the health of their workers. And so, you know, thinking about maybe realigning priorities to say, hey, I want to have a healthy, thriving workforce. And so maybe that means sacrificing some potential efficiency in the schedule. And you know, accepting that reality. I think that's one thing. You know, there are shift schedules that have been shown to be easier to adapt to for people. For example, you know, rotating shifts are really challenging, but especially backwards rotating shifts when things get earlier. Every shift gets earlier. That's one of the hardest to adapt to. I think you also have to be considerate. Like, we can't talk about scheduling without thinking about shift length, and really having shorter shifts, so more of an 8-hour shift, tends to be better. Now, that one's controversial because sometimes workers want to have their 12-hour shifts so they can get a lot of work done and, you know, cluster their work more efficiently. But the trade-off there potentially is in terms of, you know, health and that stressor on your body. Right. So yeah, there are lots of things that employers can do. There's also, you know, providing support for treatments, for lighting interventions in the workplace, having, you know, nap breaks allowable on shift and places where that's, you know, a viable thing to do. There's lots of things that employers can do.
Right. Right. Wow. And I'm thinking to myself about those, employees who do deliveries or have to operate equipment or things at night, just the challenge of sleepy driving being just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than drunk driving, for example.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, that's an important one. But I'm thinking of even like firemen and people like that who have these really different shifts. You know, they couple days on, couple days off. That's really got to play with their system. So let's say you've got someone like that, and they know they're going to have to be working this night shift for a couple days, but then they know they're going to have a couple days off. What should they do on those other days? Should they readjust their schedule and come back, or what's the best thing for them to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I wish that we had more data on this. You often hear the advice, like, keep your night schedule 24/7, right? Like, even on your off days. But that's just not realistic for most people. Like, you want to be a part of society, and most people aren't really wanting to kind of keep to those night hours all the time. So, on the other hand, your circadian rhythm is just not really going to be supportive of you completely flip-flopping your days and nights every couple of days. So I think that there's a middle ground in there somewhere that's probably the answer. That's what kind of what we recommend in our treatment, if you can, particularly when you're having those transition days, like from, you know, working to not working, is don't try to go to, like, all of a sudden I'm having a 10 p.m. bedtime, right? Maybe find something as late as you can. Try to maximize the overlap between your sleep schedule on your off days and your on days, at least maybe having a couple of hours of overlap. And so that may, you know, you're not going to be on a regular sleep schedule. Maybe you're staying up to like 3 or 4 a.m., but that lets you have some daylight hours, and it lets you, you know, transition more easily back to your work schedule when you're going back there. And the longer that you have off, the more you can kind of play with that and make things get a little bit earlier, but being a little systematic about it for sure.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah. I feel for people who have that bouncing back and forth of the schedule, because I know it's so hard for their system to adjust, and, you know, they probably want to be up during the daylight when they're off, because that's when other people are up and things. So that can be a challenge. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we have basically hit our time here, and we've learned a lot about shift work. And sounds like I said before, the number one thing is really adjusting your lighting, which is a really important thing. But, you know, if you are running into trouble and you're not able to sleep well, or you're having trouble being sleepy during the day, that you can always see a sleep specialist, and there's things that can be done. So any parting tips or words of wisdom for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just echo your sentiment that even though sleep psychologists are maybe hard to find, and sleep specialists, that we're worth it. And so if you're really struggling with sleep, you know, shift worker or not, that it's worth kind of getting some help. And there are things that we can do to support you and to help you to sleep better.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Deitch. I want to remind the audience that you can hear this episode again if you want to listen to it again on sleepsciencetoday.com. You can also go to our YouTube channel and you can see Dr. Dietsch and I talking. So we have the video version for you as well. And you can sign up for our newsletter, get a copy of a free ebook, and stay engaged with all the things that we bring to you to help you sleep better. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Dietsch, and have a great evening.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.